Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Exciting day today, a repeat guest who I absolutely loved speaking with a few weeks ago. We're going to do another conversation on immigration and marriage this time, and we have Carlos Garcia with us from the immigration law firm of Fernando Romo and Associates. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Judy. Thank you for having me. I had a great time the first time, and I'm very glad that you're having me back. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for doing it. So even though the podcast is devoted to divorces, you can't get divorced until you're married. So I wanted to circle back and talk about immigration and marriage, because sometimes our decisions to marry, period, are a little askew, but there are layers of consideration when we're in an immigration marriage.
Yes, that is definitely true, Judy. And just to follow up on what you said, you can't get married if you're not engaged. So one of our topics, I believe, is going to be fiancé visas.
First thing up, what is a fiancé visa?
Fiancé visas, in sum, allow you to petition someone who is outside of the country, a foreign national, and you promise that you will marry them 90 days after they arrive in the United States. So the fiancé visa lets them enter the United States, and that starts the clock. You have 90 days to marry that person.
What happens if you don't?
They get sent back their native country. So there's a definite time crunch on there, as you can imagine.
Does this happen very often?
The marriage or the non-marriage?
The non-marriage.
Very often is broad. I'd say it happens with some frequency, yes.
Because, and you said this on the phone, because when we meet somebody, we're excited and maybe we're not really analyzing or we don't know the person well enough. Can you flesh that out? You said it brilliantly.
Yes. So what happens is when we have consultations, this type of consultation comes up all the time. Guy travels abroad, meets this beautiful woman, this exotic woman on the shores of Costa Rica. He's on vacation. They're drinking, they're dancing, they're at the beach. And he just falls head over heels in love. He comes to us. He's like, I can't wait to bring this person back to the United States. We tell them what's required. He's like, yes, I'm going to go back there again. But every time you're with this person, you're on vacation and you're in vacation mode and you're traveling, you're visiting ruins, you're ziplining, you're going through the rainforest.
You're having cocktails.
You're having cocktails. You're being very amorous, more likely than not. And then, you know, you decide you're going to formalize it, and I want to marry this person. So this person goes to an interview in their home country. Their officer there gives them a visa to enter the United States and tells them from the day you enter, you have 90 days to marry this American citizen. And then reality hits. That person is there 24/7 living with you every single day. And they probably don't have a job here. And you probably do have a job here. So you're off away at work 40 hours a week. And this person is home all day. So there's a dramatic departure from what your perception of the relationship was abroad when you had this beautiful, exotic girlfriend. And now the situation is dramatically different. And you have 90 days till death do us part. And we're going to be married forever. And things don't, as you're well aware, things don't always work out that way.
So in that respect, that within the 90-day period, the mind has changed.
Yes.
The reality sets in. The U.S. citizen is responsible for getting the foreign national back to their country?
No. But immigration does follow up at the end of this 90-day period and says, hey,
We weren't invited to the wedding.
Where's our invite? Where's your registry? And then you say, hey, what's going on? And then procedures are put in place to have the foreign national, if they're not going to marry, removed back to their home country.
Okay, now let's take a more positive approach. Yes. So that's a tough one, and I can well understand how that happens.
Yes.
It happens here in this country too.
Yes.
Somebody moved from New York, from Las Vegas to here. They were partying. They had a great time in Las Vegas, and they came here. Real life took over, and they came here to get divorced.
Yes.
Very short-term marriage. But we're going to take the positive approach. So we have the fiancé visa.
Yes.
And we have the location for the marriage.
Yes.
While all of this is taking place, what's going on with immigration? Are there forms to file? What
yes.
does it cost? What happens?
So the initial form for the fiancé visa requires proof that you've been in contact with this person, that there is an actual relationship. So now in the age of 2020, it's text. It's emails, it's Skype, it's FaceTime, it's ticket stubs that you have traveled, that you have met in person. And then, so let's say they come to the U.S. and then you have to apply, you have to get married. And after you get married, you apply for them to obtain their residency. Okay. But as we discussed previously, because you are married, because you're asking for them to get their green card, having been married for less than 2 years, they're going to get a conditional residency, which means that at the end of a 2-year period, they're going to have to lift the conditions off the residency to become a permanent resident here in the United States.
Okay, that was really well said. This has been explained to me by several people, and that makes sense. And that's where that 2-year period, I keep hearing the 2-year
yes.
period. And when people come here, they've been married a little over 2 years. They're still scared that they won't be able to stay here and get their permanent residency card. But then if we send them to you, you will assuage their fears.
Yes.
You made the 2-year period. Was your intention to stay married? And then this particular couple, the intention really was to stay married. Mm-hmm. They came here.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good. And the cost prohibitive for
the not necessarily. I mean, in immigration, everything is expensive. So you're looking at filing fees of about $1,700 for them to be able to receive their residency, their conditional residency. And then to lift the conditions, it's another $700 or so. So that's just money that you pay immigration, not including attorney's fees.
Okay. Now, there's this other thing called a spouse visa.
Yes.
Could you explain what that is?
So a spouse visa means that you, for whatever reason, you decide to go ahead and you take the plunge. You travel to Costa Rica, you meet the woman of your dreams or man of your dreams, and you get married abroad. And now you're married. Something fundamental that's important to recognize, there's a reciprocity agreement across the countries where a marriage in Brazil, El Salvador, France is recognized in the United States and vice versa. So if you're married abroad, that marriage is legally valid and binding in the United States as well. So now you have a wife and now you have to, well, this is a conversation that couples have. How soon do you want to come to the U.S.? Do I want to spend some time abroad, you know, establishing a relationship with you before you come to the U.S.? And, you know, that's a more of a relationship question than an immigration question, but we are there to kind of talk people through it as well.
Are there any countries that we don't have a relationship with that would recognize and honor a marriage abroad with a U.S. citizen involved?
Not that I'm aware of, but I think the United States does a very good job of trying to be open to relationships which are maybe untraditional. For example, some countries allow you to marry your first cousin, which is not, I think it's allowed in all U.S. 50 states, but I'm not certain. They allow for arranged marriages where even if you have never met this person in person before, if your families have come to an agreement and a marriage takes place, the United States government recognizes that marriage as well.
Okay. So there are no time constraints to do anything Are there once you bring your spouse to the United States, or are there?
If the 2-year rule still holds. So if you apply for them to come to the United States within 2 years of marriage, they are still going to be a conditional resident upon arrival to the United States.
Okay. And hold on a minute. So it says, I was reading and sharing this with you before we started. Talk to me a second about the spouse visa is good for 6 months, and then the foreign national has to revise paperwork. Is that right? Did I read that right?
Yes. So that 6 months is 6 months from the date of marriage. It's kind of designed to expedite things. The overwhelming majority of the time, the American citizen is very eager to bring their wife back to the, or husband back to the U.S. so that they can start their lives here. And most spouses are very eager to come to the United States and start their lives here. So this 6 months time frame is kind of designed for, expeditiously resolving this and having your spouse with you as soon as possible.
Okay, so here's a sentence I was reading, and please clarify. So the spouse visa is valid for 6 months and permits the holder to come to the United States and reside permanently. With this visa, no adjustment of status is necessary. Is that true?
Yes. So that means that when they come in, they are automatically given conditional residency because the marriage is still shorter
than 2 years.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you will see that this 2-year mark is very prevalent and very prominent and kind of a clock that starts running that the couples are usually extremely aware of.
Okay. And then, but how about, so what if the people on a spouse visa want to get divorced a little under 2 years? Is that a softer look by the immigration authorities because they already got married in another country or no?
No, I think a lot of these immigration officials look skeptically at these whirlwind romances. And so being divorced before the 2 years, whether you entered as a fiance or whether you entered as a spouse, there's going to be some potentially harsh questioning. And then, as you are well aware, California law requires 6 months before a divorce is final once it's been filed, right?
True.
So
they can play with that 2 years a little bit, right?
And you're kind of shortening it. You know, if you just can't make it to month 18, right. You know, you have to take that into consideration as well.
Okay. So this is kind of good news for people who really thought the marriage was going to last and found out that it couldn't and were slightly under 2 years. If they file for divorce slightly under 2 years in California, they can't get divorced anyway until they're over the 2-year mark. So it doesn't matter when they file, it matters when the divorce is concluded and finalized.
Correct.
Okay, that's good to know because people ask me this all the time.
Correct. So that is the case. That 6-month lag or 6-month time period should definitely be taken into consideration if your relationship with your spouse is just untenable. And, you know, that's a decision that, you know, it goes towards animosity, it goes towards, you know, living arrangements. Are there children / stepchildren involved? Mm-hmm. So we tell clients, although I can't tell you whether to get divorced or not, that's a decision you have to make. But I, as your lawyer, will inform you what the different paths are if you were to get divorced at stage A, stage B, stage C, whatever the case may be.
Excellent. And the cost for a spouse visa is relatively the same?
Yes, very comparable to the fiancé visa.
All right. So then in that case, the foreign national is overseas.
Yes.
The U.S. citizen is overseas.
And he gets married.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has a decision.
Right.
Do I want to do a fiancé visa and get married in the United States where all my friends and family are? I mean, I bet that is part of their decision. Or do I want to get married here and bring my spouse over on a spouse visa? Any considerations pro or con there?
I mean,
purely personal.
I would purely personal, but I'd be hard pressed to think of a situation in which a spousal visa is a better way to go than a fiance visa. Fiance visa allows you to kind of set things on your own terms. Although you do have this 90-day clock, at least you're able to live with this person. You're not married. You don't have to worry about getting divorced if things don't go well.
Right.
And that's a practical consideration. So if there's any, if we're weighing two options, I would heavily suggest and advise a fiance visa.
Just for that real life consideration. And you're so right. Because even you could even be not on vacation. You as a U.S. citizen could be working on an assignment in another country. You meet somebody, you meet their family, everything is great. But when you take them from their family and they're living in the United States, it's a different life. And maybe the foreign national on their own may say, oh, shoot, I kind of like life with my family and with all of our cultural, you know, just the cultural events
I think that's very true. And I think a lot of times there's children involved. So are you ready, you know, if you come from, you know, a comparable European country, let's say you work in Belgium, and you come to the U.S. and you realize that maybe there aren't same type of programs or safety nets or social availability, you may be getting cold feet, as in, like, is really the U.S. the best place for me to raise our child as opposed to raising them abroad? So, yeah, I think children play a large consideration in what is the best approach and where to live and whatnot.
Good advice. Now, one of the things that people know the most about the idea of an immigration marriage is, well, they just got married so this person could have their card.
Yes.
It could get into the United States. And there's enough of that.
Yes.
As we all know. But I wanted to talk about marriage and fraud for a moment, because that kind of comes under the heading of fraud if you purposely marry, knowing you're not going to stay married, but just to allow somebody to come into the country. There's the other side of it, too. The foreign national may be presenting themselves in such a way that it looks like they really want to be married to you. And then when they get here, it's not like that at all.
Yes, that is very true. And I can tell you that in every single immigration office where interviews are held, there's a big sign on the wall that says, marriage fraud is a federal crime punishable by a $10,000 fine and a year imprisonment. So there's a stark reminder when you go in for these interviews that if you are doing something that you shouldn't be doing, there are consequences for it.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about this until right now when you said it. But what do you do as a third party who's been asked to write a statement by the U.S. citizen for the foreign national, soon to be spouse, to say, because this happened to me, that what they bring to the United States in terms of a job skill is so unique and so important that we need people to write letters. What is that process when we're asked to write letters to support a marriage?
I would be very cautious in writing those letters and be careful with what you say. In our office, we require those letters to be done under penalty of perjury so that people take it seriously. And if you can't specifically speak to a person's abilities as an engineer, as a singer, as a whatever unique skill set they have, then I would probably respectfully decline, because you could get yourself in trouble as well.
So I was asked, I was in the music business at this time, producing entertainment for events, private events. And one of my most favored band leader musicians wanted to marry somebody French. And he wanted me, among other people, to write a letter saying that her unique skill as a mime was...
Wow. A mime, huh?
Was unbelievable. And I said, A, I've never seen her be a mime.
Right.
And B, we don't use mimes. I'm in the entertainment industry. Almost nobody uses mimes anymore.
You're not a mime expert?
Not a mime expert. And I, for some odd reason, am getting a really bad feeling about even doing it. So I think you're going to have to get mad at me. Thank God I said that. Because it turned out to be a horrifying relationship.
Yeah.
And nobody else agreed to do it either. But what is this process called, though?
In the case that you're referring to, they're probably trying to bring her over as a skilled worker. And they need people to testify to her skills.
That was it.
Whatever it may be. So it's a slightly different setting. But in this case, if you have an average person that you're trying to immigrate, there are still character references which can be used to supplement an application that do testify to, you know, Johnny and Janie, we went to Big Bear with them and their love is so true. They're going to be married forever and have the most wonderful children, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, you could submit those, but I mean, they're not. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to the officer, what he thinks of the relationship and what is presented to him in terms of, you know, is she added onto your life insurance? Is she on your car insurance? Is she on your health insurance? Do you guys file taxes together, et cetera?
Oh, and I'm sure everyone conducting these interviews has heard everything.
Yes.
Okay, so what should either the U.S. citizen do or the foreign national do if they have been the victims of fraud once the marriage takes place? Like, for instance, the wife really can't have children, and she's the foreign national. And the U.S. citizen, that's what they talked about, is raising a family together. That's just one example. Or the U.S. husband can't financially support the wife properly, although they presented themselves as having more money. Or the foreign national or U.S. citizen is actually a criminal hiding their record. What do you do when you think you're the victim of fraud?
These are all very challenging questions and kind of speak as to what your relationship is. So there's an inherent imbalance of power between the person who has status and the person who doesn't. You know, because the person who doesn't have status is kind of at the whim and mercy of their partner. So I think once you take everything into consideration, the foreign national is incentivized, perhaps, to not be completely forthcoming about their intention in a relationship, their ability to have children, if they have a criminal past, etc. So if you believe you're you're the victim of fraud, you would admit to that kind of to only save your own hide and to say that you were not assisting them in perpetuating a fraud against the U.S. government.
Okay, so let's just take a simple example of, it's a man who's the foreign national.
Okay.
The woman is the U.S. citizen. She cannot have children, mm-hmm. did not disclose it. He left his country. This is really an odd example. He left his country, which he loved, to mm-hmm. come to the United States, and now he can't have a family, and he learned it under 2 years, mm-hmm. that two-year mark. What are his options? Does he even have an option to stay?
My first question was, does he want to stay in the United States?
Okay, good. All right, good first question. Let's just say yes.
He does.
Because now he got a good job, he has friends, and life is good.
Okay, but he can't have a family.
Correct.
Which is of critical importance to him. So one of two options. One is, does he want to get a divorce? If he wants to get a divorce, he has to time it, taking into consideration this two-year requirement that's going to be coming up. So if he wants to get a divorce, he can ask for something called a waiver of joint filing of the form, which means that you will file for divorce and that you are asking that you don't have to file with your spouse because you are divorced. That's one option.
To upgrade your status.
Right. To go from a conditional resident to a permanent resident.
Legal permanent.
Okay. If he does not want to get a divorce until after the 2 years and once the conditions have been lifted, that may be a better way to play it. Okay. Considering he's, you know, in your example, he's well established. He has a job. Right. He has a good social circle here, etc.
Okay. Now, let's just say the woman is the foreign national, thinking that her husband could support her, U.S. citizen husband, comes to find out that the house is in horrible condition and he doesn't really have a job.
Oof.
She was just fooled.
Wow.
Now what does she do? And we're slightly under 2 years.
That is a much more trying position for her to be in because now you can get divorced for any reason. It's no fault, right? You don't need to provide a reason.
In California, yes.
In California, you don't have to provide the reason why you're getting divorced. Yeah. But, I mean, she's in a position where she's probably going to want to get out of that relationship as soon as possible. And she can provide testimony as to what was misrepresented to her about his financial being. In that case, I'd probably file for divorce and try to, you know, even though you clearly had the best of intentions of going into that relationship, that it seems to be very untenable. If you're in a foreign country, you probably have difficulty finding a job of your own. The person who said that they were going to financially support you is unable to. I mean, that's a very difficult position to be in.
Yes. And I've seen a couple of those come through, too, and it actually is rather heartbreaking. What I've also seen in the last few years, older men who had been married a long time and love being married, went on vacation, their wives died, and now they meet somebody, as a rebound, love the idea that they're marrying somebody from a country which still has the old structure we had, that man is on top, man rules the family. That's where they come from. And I lost my train of thought on that. Where am I going with this?
I can tell you that is very common.
I know where I'm going with this. The women are abusive. The women turn out to be abusive to their husbands, and they're always very young, like half their age. Men are in their 60s, if not 70s. Women are in their 30s, and now the women get to be abusive. Have you seen that? I was surprised.
I haven't seen that, but I know that immigration is trying to take a broader approach, as is society in general, that, you know, abuse, takes many forms. It can be emotional. It can be physical. It could be mental.
And financial.
I think it is very important to be cognizant of different types of abuse. And then also, I think as a society, unfortunately, we're dismissive of if a man complains about abuse towards his or from his partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you're the man of the house. Like, what do you mean she's abusing you? Like, buck up, you know, don't let that happen. You're the man of the house. And I think men are reluctant to come forward. And there's pride, they're embarrassed. So it takes a lot of wherewithal for a man who is 65 to say, my 40-year-old wife from abroad, you know, steals all my money, has sold off my jewelry, you know, tells me that I'm, you know, old and ugly and bald. You know, that's
right.
Abuse.
Yes.
You know, and I think that I haven't seen that personally. But I think that we as a society need to be more open to acknowledging that things like that happen in order to encourage men to come forward and discuss it.
Right. And these two men that I'm thinking of had long marriages and really nice marriages. So they were in shock mm-hmm. at what they were seeing mm-hmm. and couldn't believe it and stayed married for a little while until they realized they just want my money.
Right.
And that's really in both of the cases that came here. They just wanted the money and to be here.
Yeah. And I think that has to be such a saddening realization where you've mm-hmm. had a previously fulfilling marriage with your wife who passed on. And then you get lonely. You're looking for a companionship. And, you know, sometimes you fall victim. You know, elder abuse is also something that needs to be discussed more often as well.
It's true.
You know, and this is a form of elder abuse. This is a person who's being taken advantage of. Predominantly because of their age. And maybe these women see that these men are they pick up on these signals. You know, I see that he's ripe for, you know,
so
for
true.
Being taken advantage of.
So true. So I want to morph into you're marrying an illegal foreign national. So when you're marrying somebody, a foreign national, at what point do you discuss, you meet here, mm-hmm. at what point do you discuss the status of their paperwork and standing?
Right. I think that is a great question. I know there's been articles in the LA Times recently discussing that very topic, but I think it is probably, you know, I'm born in the United States and I'm a citizen, so I think I have a privileged point of view. But I think there is a tremendous amount of embarrassment at times.
And your family's from El Salvador? Do I
yes.
remember that correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a tremendous amount of embarrassment. You know, how do you, because all these interplays come in, like if I didn't have status and I meet a person who does, is their mind automatically going to jump to, oh, he's just going to marry me because he's going to have status in the U.S.? You know, and are they going to push me away because they think I'm taking advantage of them? Or do I just hold on to it and have this secret inside? And then she's planning a trip for us to go to Paris for our anniversary. And then I have to tell her,
the visas. Where are the visas?
I can't go to Paris because they won't let
me
back.
For the passports, I mean.
Yeah, I won't be able to come back into the U.S. You know, so I think, you know, it's an intimately personal question that unfortunately has very practical applications. And from what I've witnessed, it does come to a head. It's like, oh, my friends and I, you know, our friend group, we're thinking about going to Cabo for the summer break or winter break, or we're going to have a friend's birthday party abroad. And then that's when it comes to fruition, like, hey, I don't have status and I'm not going to be able to go.
Okay, now, is a U.S. citizen allowed to marry a known illegal foreign national?
Yes.
Isn't this weird? I know we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Please explain. It's so weird,
I mean,
to me.
It's protected by the Constitution, by the First Amendment, something called freedom of association, in which you are able to marry a person who you know doesn't have lawful status in the U.S.
How is that possible? Really?
Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, you're able to marry who you please. And if they can provide identifying documentation to the courthouse, you can get married and knowing full well that they don't have status in the U.S.
Okay, so when you go to the courthouse, I so don't remember this from 1984 when I got married. Uh-huh. It's a blur. When you go to the courthouse to get married, don't you have to bring a lot of documentation, a driver's license, a social security card, maybe a passport, a variety of things?
Yes, but you can bring your Mexican passport, California has licenses that they issue specifically to people that don't have status in the U.S.
Oh.
To kind of circle it back around, I can live my everyday life in a state in California if I don't have status. I can get a work permit. I can have a driver's license. I can file my taxes. I can be an attorney. I can be an accountant, you know, without having my lack of status impact me. It's these very specific things like traveling abroad for a trip, which I can't do if I don't have status in the U.S. That's when it all comes to, like, you would have no forewarning that the person you are dating doesn't have status unless you ask them for whatever weird reason.
An event comes up that requires
right.
acknowledging that.
Yeah, and kind of specifically referring to people who have deferred action who have been here since they were 1 year, 5 years, 7 years old. I mean, they are as American as can be. You know, they've been raised and shaped in this country. So there would be no open indicator that this person didn't have status when you started to date them.
Okay, so you get married to somebody that does not have status. You don't know it until after you are married and something comes up mm-hmm. that they can't leave the country then. Mm-hmm. You still want to stay married to them.
Good
I guess
for you.
You can.
Yeah, of course. That's no reason to get divorced.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you can work with them in helping them obtain status through you. You can then start the formal paperwork of them obtaining the residency through their marriage.
As a spouse.
You. Yes. Here in the U.S.
Okay. So I think this will be my last question. There is a mechanism then to turn an illegal foreign national into a legal resident?
Yes. But for most people, it involves them having to go back to their country at some point for an interview.
Oh, okay. And is the mechanism only through marriage?
Not only, but specifically at the firm where I work and across the board from a practical point of view, yes. Employment visas aren't really a viable option for a lot of people in our demographic, specifically North American, Central American, South Americans. So typically, if you don't have status and you want to find status in the U.S., it's through marriage.
Okay, well, let's all get married, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
But if it doesn't work out, please come see me.
Yes.
So, Carlos, is there anything else as we're ending this episode that you would like to add on that I didn't ask?
I think this is a topic that we could speak about for hours and hours. But I think the most important part is that as lawyers, people come to us for advice and ask, what should I do? I can never tell you what you should do. I can just lay out different options for you, and then you can decide what's best for you. Especially when we're talking about decisions as important as marriage, divorce. You know, clients often ask, should I get married? Well, I can't tell you whether you should get married. That's a very loaded question, you know. But I can tell you what your options are if you are married and if you're not. So I think that's something to take into consideration. I mean, this is the most intimate of relationships. Between husband and spouse. So it needs to be, you need to take into consideration more than just legal factors when you do so.
I have so enjoyed this interview as much as the first one. You are wonderful.
Thank you.
And you have to
appreciate it.
You have to keep coming back. I know everybody listening has probably had the same positive experience I have.
That's very kind of you.
Thank you so much. How can people get in touch with you, Carlos?
They can definitely reach me by email. It's the best email. It's romolegal, R-O-M-O-L-E-G-A-L, @gmail.com. We are more than happy to answer any questions that you have, set up an in-person consultation. If you, due to current world status, it's better through phone
yes.
or Skype or FaceTime.
Unfortunately, as we know.
We can do that as well, but we are still open and willing to help anyone who's in need.
That's wonderful. And I just want to say one more time, Romo Legal, R-O-M-O, legal, @gmail.com.
Yes.
Thank you, and Carlos, and thank you, everybody, for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces and marriages now, at least with this episode. I'm Judy Weigel, your host, your amicable divorce expert. If you need to reach me, you can through my website, divorceresourceinc.com, divorceresourceinc.com, or email me, Judy, J-U-D-Y, @constructiveuncoupling.com. Judy @constructiveuncoupling.com. Share this with your friends. Sign up, be a subscriber, and I look forward to our next episode. Take care.